purchased in individuals. We talked about different theories of the relationship between churches and individuals. And some of these theories, the way that the individual responsibilities can be thought of as impacting the church and its responsibilities involve what I've called a skip pass. In other words, we can see that there's a relationship between the individual Christian and the church. We can see that there's a relationship between the individual Christian and the family or the home. And sometimes people want to make a skip pass and say that means that there's a relationship between the church and the home, and they skip over the individual Christian. I think that's a mistake. The individual Christian is impacted by the church, and that's going to impact the other relationships that the individual Christian has. But we have to understand that you can't make that, what I call it, a skip pass and overstep the individual to say that the church then has a specific relationship to every other aspect of the individual Christian's relationships. So as we were thinking about this initially, Bob mentioned that the individual Christian also has a responsibility to the environment, or what would you say, to the world, to nature. And I went back and spent some time in the last couple of weeks trying to understand the individual Christian and his relationship to the environment. And I've modified my chart so that I put the environment up there, and we'll be talking about that a little bit as we go on tonight. We talked about the individual Christian and his relationship to the church. We talked about the individual and their relationship to the community. Now, remember, you can't make a skip pass. You can't go from church to community. That's not permissible. The church and the Christian have a relationship, and the Christian has a relationship with the community. That's undeniable, but you can't make the skip pass and get the church related to the community. So I hope that helps clear this up a little bit. We talked about the individual Christian and his relationship to the business enterprises that he's a part of. Could be that he's a owner of the business and he employs people. Could be that he's a employee in the business and works for an owner. It could be that he's a master who owns those people that are indentured to him. Could be that he's one of those that's indentured to the master. But in any case, the individual Christian has a responsibility there. We talked a little bit about the church and or the individual Christian and the relationship that they have in the home. And we do have a relationship to family. But to say that the church then has a relationship to my family is an improper skip pass. The church needs to educate me about my relationship to the family, but it's doing so that I individually will have a responsibility or a relationship with my family. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's continue. Let's talk a little bit about government. Individual Christians have a relationship with the government where they live. And that relationship is not dependent upon having a government that is supportive of Christians. So I want to look at Romans 13 because I think the apostle there outlines our relationship individually to governments and how that relationship is impacted by a government that's oppressive or a government that is unfriendly to the way that a Christian wants to live his life. This is a matter that was discussed a great deal during the Civil War. Individual Christians had to figure out what their relationship was going to be to the government where they lived. And there were a lot of Christians that lived in the South and had to figure out whether they had a relationship to a breakaway government and what that government was supposed to do and what they were supposed to do. And a lot of Christians fought on the side of the South during the Civil War. A lot of Christians refused to fight on the side of the South during the Civil War. A lot of Christians fought on the side of the North during the Civil War. And a lot refused to fight on the side of the North during the Civil War. They did that because they did not see that the relationship that they had with the government was such that they could be compelled to kill Christians on the other side. And I don't know if you have read David Lipscomb and his analysis of what was going on, particularly during the Civil War. It's important because David Lipscomb lived in the South, and he had to come up with an understanding of what that relationship was. So if you haven't read Lipscomb's commentary on the Book of Romans, I would suggest that you get it and read it. It's enlightening. It's not something that I necessarily agree with in totality, but it's something that nevertheless we need to think about. We may face a situation in our country where we have to deal with those kinds of questions. We don't face it now. That thankfully we don't face it now, but we do have to understand. And I will tell you, we have a responsibility to the government. When I was of draftable age, when I was 18, I was convinced that I had to be a pacifist. I was convinced that that's what God required of me. So I registered as a conscientious objector. I was willing to serve my government, but I was not willing to take up arms and kill another person as a part of that responsibility. I would have served in as a medic. I would have served in an administrative role, but I was not going to take up arms against another human being in the service of my government. For a lot of reasons, I don't need to go into my military classifications, but I did not serve. I did have to appear at the draft board, had to defend my decision. My dad disagreed with me. He felt like I was making a decision that was based on my understanding of biblical information, best as it was. He didn't see it the same way I did, but he defended me at the draft board. And I am forever grateful to him that he said, yes, it's something that I disagree with, but I know that he does this because of biblical information. So these are not easy questions, but they're questions that we sometimes have to face. Now, let it be said that I would not, at this point in my life, having studied further, I would not register as a conscientious objector. I could defend my government. But that was my position at the time, based on everything I could read. So let's talk about the Christian and his relationship to government. Somebody want to read Romans 13? Verses 1 through, you could really read the entirety of that chapter, but I think we'll catch the drift of what's being said if we read from verse 1 down through verse 8.
I can read that.
Let every soul be subject to the government authorities, for there is no authority except God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whosoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment upon themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the Savior. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister and avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for they are God's ministers attending continually to this very thing. Render, therefore, to all their due, taxes to taxes to whom are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Owe no one except, owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law.
Okay. Any comments, any thoughts here? Now, you have to remember clearly this is written by the Apostle Paul at a time when the Roman government is not pursuing good for its citizens. Okay, it was clearly an oppressive government. But Paul says, render unto Caesar or give to the government that which is due to the government. Any thoughts? I mean, I wish I could say that our government always did what God meant for it to be doing. But clearly, we can say that it doesn't. Yeah, Bill?
There was going on at that time a conflict between the Christians and the Jews.
Yeah, that's true.
Where the Jews were telling them, don't preach in this name. And they were disagreeing with them and still preaching because they had to do what God told them to do.
Okay.
They were not obeying the authorities. They were obeying God.
Okay.
And they and we have occasions where the government disagrees with God. And we have a higher authority than that.
Absolutely. And we've gone through that just recently as we had to deal with the government and whether or not churches could meet together for the purpose of worship. And we had to figure out how to comply with God's requirement that we worship, and yet at the same time, if we could, figure out a way to comply with the government and what they were telling us about worship. Yeah, Bob?
So the obvious question to me is that should a Christian serve an individual like Adolf Hitler or Saddam Hussein, Gaddafi, or a multitude of vicious rulers?
Yeah. Could he serve the Romans who were just like Hitler or just like Gaddafi? So, yeah, could a Christian live in that regime? Yeah.
Did the early Christians serve in a military capacity for the Romans?
Some of them did. Some were centurions. We know about the centurion who was converted. We also know that when John was preaching, the Roman soldiers came to him and they said, what should we do? He said, don't be content with your wages. Don't extort people.
I always thought the centurion was a Roman.
He was a Roman, but became a Christian, I'm convinced.
Yeah.
And in that capacity, I think he served God. Now, was he a different kind of centurion after he started serving God than he was before he became a Christian? I think so. But I think that the key to understanding that is what John said. act like a Christian. You can still serve the Roman Empire, but you don't have to do it as an oppressor.
We have examples of government employees who, the tax collectors.
Oh, sure.
They were hated people as a rule.
Sure, sure. Was Matthew a different? Yeah. I don't know that he continued as a tax collector, okay? But would he have been a different tax collector as a Christian than he was before he became a Christian? I think so. He would have been fair. If nothing says don't pay your taxes, but pay fair, but the tax collector ought to collect fair taxes. So, yeah.
We had the, in France and other countries, you had the underground that put up resistance to the government. And I would assume you have people who would put in the situation as a Christian that you had to lie because you were protecting somebody. When Anne Frank's was in Holland, they hid them. They had to lie about what they were doing. And so it really becomes much bigger than just what side are you on or can you resist, you know, because you may have to protect somebody else's life. You may be put in a situation where you have to repent later.
Well, and there's nothing that says that you have to lie, okay? There's nothing that says if the government comes to you and says, are you hiding Anne Frank? I choose not to answer. I don't have to lie. I still have the option of not answering. Now, they might kill me for not answering, but they cannot compel me to, they can't compel me to lie. Just like Rahab the harlot when she hid the slaves or hid the spies. I don't know that she was compelled to lie. She just wasn't going to answer. And if I made the decision that if the government was to come and say, we're going to take your children, where are they? I would just refuse to answer the question.
Yes, but if they were hidden in the house and you knew that by not answering, they would search the house.
Sure.
Yeah. I can't do anything about that. That's on them. That's not on me. But I just wouldn't answer. And yeah, we find ourselves in those situations all the time. Kim was in those situations because she worked as an HR manager for the city of Pomona. And there were all kinds of times when she was just in the position where she said, I'm not gonna answer that question. Now, fortunately, she managed to keep her job. She was very good at what she did, and she did not get fired for not doing what they said she needed to do. But, yeah, sometimes we have to not answer. So don't ever let people think that you're forced into the position that you have to lie. You don't. You just don't have to answer. And there may be times when I choose not to answer. So, I wish I could say that governments always do what they do in our best interest. I think that I can point to situations where governments have done things for their interests and not mine. But remember, Paul did say, would you not be afraid of the government? Do what's good and you will not have fear. And I try to illustrate that when I'm driving down the road and I see the police car behind me with the lights flashing, if I'm obeying the speed limit, if I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do, I have no fear that the lights are flashing behind me, because I know that they're going after somebody in front of me who is breaking the law.
That's right.
At least that's what I hope. Okay. And I have to tell you, there was a time in my life when I saw a police car behind me flashing blue, 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 I knew he was after me because I was speeding or, you know, cutting people off or doing whatever. And yeah, then you have to be afraid. But if you're doing good, don't be afraid. And I think we all kind of recognize that. It was difficult when we went through COVID and the government was saying you can't worship together. Well, we found a way around that. We could still worship, and we did it with Zoom. And the government couldn't say, if the government had said you cannot worship, then we would have worshiped anyway. But the government says you cannot worship in this way because it involves certain dangers, and we could find another way to accomplish what God was telling us to do, that's the approach that the elders took. We'll just find a different way. And I think it's turned out to be a blessing in some ways. We have the ability for 11 people or so, maybe more than that, to join us when they can't get here. So I think it's a good thing. We have John.
What would you say about, like, this country that we live in here? We're ruled by, supposedly, by our Constitution, not necessarily Joe Biden or Donald Trump or anybody that were supposedly. I mean, I see how Paul exercised it as a Roman citizen. He pushed the envelope a bit. So what do you say about that?
Yeah, and he did say, I'm a Roman citizen. I'm going to take advantage of my Roman citizenship. I appeal to Caesar. You must transport me to Rome. So, yes. He also said, if I've done anything worthy of death, I don't refuse to die. But I get to make my defense. Yeah, I get to make my defense. And yes, I think we have tremendous advantages living in this country because we answer to the Constitution. I think that's absolutely correct. And if the government was to tell me to do something that violated the Constitution, to which I owe an allegiance, then yes, I can say, you owe your allegiance to the Constitution. So but that's not an easy thing. It's never easy to make these decisions.
Well, the reason that it's not easy, at least from my point of view, is because there are always consequences. You must make a choice. Are you willing to forfeit your life? Or
right.
Are you willing to forfeit the life of members of your family to serve the Lord?
Yeah. And that was a part of the discussion that I had with my father-in-law, who knew that I was a pacifist and was marrying his daughter. He said, what would you do if someone were to come in and wanted to kill your wife? Would you defend her using physical force, even to the point of taking the life of someone who was attacking your wife? And I said, no, I would not. And I was surprised that he still let me marry his daughter. Okay, but you're right. It does involve consequences. Now I think I have a different understanding.
I think, too, that God is watching the nations.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that he controls them. And if it gets too bad, that nation's going to end up disappearing.
I hope that you're right. I hope that you're right. I know that that was the case during the old covenant, because the old covenant was a theocracy, and governments came to power and ruled at the determination of God. He says that about the Babylonians. Okay. And that was also true of Israel or of Judah. It doesn't matter. It was true of all governments that have ever existed. God is in control. And I have to say, sometimes I'm like Habakkuk. God, how long am I going to have to look at this wickedness? You need to do something. And it may be that God says, okay, I'm going to do something. And then I say, wait a minute, that's a little more drastic than what I had in mind. So I think that was the case with Habakkuk. But we, as individual Christians, we have a responsibility in government. Now, does the church get to skip past and say, we have a responsibility to, or we have a relationship with government? I don't think it does. The church can inform individuals about their relationship with government, but the church doesn't acquire a relationship with government because of it. And that's not the approach that governments or churches have taken in the past. Remember, it was the Pope who decided whether or not somebody was going to be the king. And the Pope was the one who crowned them king. And that's I don't see any warrant for that. Okay? Look at 1 Peter 2. Verse 13. Somebody want to read verses 13 through 17?
Therefore, submit yourself to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme, or to governors, or to those who are sent by him, for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men.
Down through verse 17.
Sorry. As free yet not, with liberty as a cloak provided, but as bondservants of God. Honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king.
Okay. I think that last part is what, in my mind, rules the day. Honor everyone, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the emperor.
Yeah.
So that's again, he's stressing that Paul had stressed the idea that governments exist for the good of man. And Peter stresses the same thing here. Government exists for the good of man, or at least that's the intention of God, that they exist for the good of man. We know that that's not always the case. Sometimes governments become oppressive and they rule based on what's good for the king, not what's good for people. I mean, in the ultimate example of that has to be the divine right of kings. where a virgin is betrothed to be married and the king has the right to take her for sexual purposes because of the divine right of kings, that cannot be defended as somehow for the good of people. And it shouldn't be. Now, what does that mean? Would I get married in secret? Maybe. Maybe. Would I get married and defend my wife? Maybe. You'll have to figure that out for yourself. Okay. But the church has no right or no responsibility to depose wicked kings. They don't have a responsibility to prop them up either. And a lot of people would argue that the Catholic Church, in particular, propped up Hitler throughout Europe. They have no responsibility to do that. They have no responsibility to take him down, but they had no responsibility to prop him up. They did have a responsibility to educate Christians. And Christians then have the relationship with government, not the church. Okay. Look at Matthew 12. This is Jesus. Matthew 12 at verse 21.
And in his name shall the Gentiles trust.
Okay. That's the name of the emperor, or is it the name of God? It's the name of God. That's where you need to put your trust. And I think that also means don't put your trust in a government that is supportive of Christianity. Put your trust in God. One more passage. Let's look at 1 Timothy chapter 2. And remember, all of these are statements that are made to individual Christians. They're not statements that are made to churches. Somebody want to read 1 Timothy 2 at verse 1 beginning?
I urge them, first of all, that petitions, prayers, intercession, and thanksgiving be made for all people, for kings and all those in authority, that we may live peaceful and quiet lives in all godliness and holiness. This is good and pleases God our Savior, who wants all people to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. For there is one God and one mediator between God and mankind, the man Jesus Christ, who gave himself as a ransom for all people. This has now been witnessed to at the proper time. And for this purpose, I was appointed a herald and an apostle. I am telling the truth. I am not lying, and a true and faithful teacher of the Gentiles. Therefore, I want the men everywhere to pray, lifting up holy hands without anger or disputing. Oh.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I wanted you to read verse 8 as well, because I think verse 8 ties this back to the beginning. I urge that supplications and prayers, intercessions and thanksgiving be made for all people. And that, when he says all people, that includes kings. What are we praying for?
That they serve God.
Are we praying that they serve God?
Peace.
It says for quiet, peaceful life and all godliness and reverence.
Okay. So the prayer in some ways is that he'll just leave, that the king will just leave us alone and let us serve God. It would be nice if kings were supportive of Christianity, but Constantine shows that that doesn't work very well either. When the church became state-sponsored, then Constantine could say to his army, I'm going to baptize you all. And he marched them through a river. So I don't think we want that. But I do want to stress that it's proper for us as individuals to pray that we lead a quiet and peaceful life. And I can't see that that commandment is ever given to churches. No skip passes. Because it's a commandment given to individuals doesn't mean it's a commandment given to churches. Okay? And then we're at the point where I'd like to spend a little bit more time thinking about our responsibility to the environment. And we only have a very few minutes left. So I'd like to hold that off until next week. Yeah, Bob.
If you're going to do that, could I ask a question?
Oh, sure.
We've been talking about the Christian's responsibility to government.
Mm-hmm.
And that the church doesn't necessarily have responsibility to government. So what's going to happen when the government decides to tax churches? The church will have to have a relationship with the government. It already has, because we pay Social Security tax for you because you're a church employee. I'm not asking for a definitive answer.
Yeah.
It's going to be
You're right.
Up in the air, isn't it?
You're right. We don't pay property taxes, and it wouldn't bother me if we did. Now, we would owe property taxes based on our location. But it seems reasonable to me that if we're going to ask for police protection for our property here, that we ought to pay property taxes. I know that we're exempt from paying those property taxes.
Yeah.
So, we are not a 503c corporation. We have a relationship with the government based on being a church, not based on being a nonprofit organization. So that's just, and if you make a contribution to the church, then the government says that you can deduct that contribution from your taxes or from your income on which you pay taxes. And I have no problem with that. I would have no problem with the government saying, we're going to end that. And you have to pay taxes on it anyway. Would that impact my responsibility to support the work that the church is doing? No, wouldn't have any impact on it at all. Do I take advantage of it? Yes, I do. The government says that because I'm a preacher, I get a certain tax treatment that other people don't get. I can deduct whatever it costs for me to have a house, a place to live. They call it the manse. So I get to deduct whatever it costs me to have a house. So I get this tremendous advantage. I can take off my house payment before I calculate my taxes, and then I get the same deduction that everybody else does for the taxes that I pay. So I get a double dip. I take advantage of that. So, yes. Yes. Carol?
Well, the church also has a relationship with government, because government says you have this fire code here and you have this building code and all of that. But I think the point is that the church isn't in the position to tell Christians as a congregation how to deal with government. You're not going to be preaching.
I don't think that's a skip pass. I think the church has a responsibility to tell individual Christians, you must honor the emperor. Okay? That's not a political statement. It's a biblical statement. So churches have a responsibility to educate Christians about what their responsibility is to the government. Not to have the responsibility, but to educate.
But a lot of churches nowadays, they go one way or the other, and they're particularly slanting their point of view.
That's true. I don't think the church has any right or has any responsibility to tell individual Christians how to vote.
That's it, the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Bill?
If the church itself and us by extension, we're paying taxes on our contributions and the church's budget, we would be supporting the government in this immoral program, which we shouldn't be doing. When our business is to preach the word and save souls, it's not to support the government.
I agree, but remember, Jesus and Paul both said, pay taxes. And there was no more corrupt government can be found than the Roman government.
Yep.
Okay. That's not me supporting the activity. I'm supporting the government. The government decides how they're going to use it. I wish I had the ability to designate on my taxes, you can't use any of this tax money to provide abortions. Okay. I wish I could do that, but I can't. So I do support the government. And do I know that some of my money goes to support programs with which I absolutely disagree? Yes, I do. Now, some people have taken the position that you have taken. I can't support the government, so I will not pay taxes if you don't give me the ability to designate. I can't give my money to an organization that supports abortion. So, yeah, it's an individual decision. Now, can I try to change the law? Well, absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with that. If I don't like the law, I can try to change it. And there's a lot of laws that I don't like that I do try to change. And I lobbied the governor's office when they said, you can't gather for worship. And I tried to point out that our gathering for worship did not involve the same kinds of dangers that you saw in perhaps people going to a football game and cheering. We had taken steps to prevent those dangers. So, yeah, I lobbied the government to try to get, did it make a difference? Probably not. I don't think they even read my emails. I shouldn't say that. It didn't make a difference. It didn't change anything. But did I try? Yeah, I tried. Okay. We've run out of time for tonight.